How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily podcast on the Los Angeles Lakers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. It is late. Harrison kept us up to the wee hours of the night just because, you know, for some crazy, you know, job reason, education and stuff. tonight's show is actually a really fun one. We've been looking forward to this for quite some time. Pete Zayas at Laker Film Room, the guy behind the best Laker film breakdowns that are really anywhere, period. Is joining us tonight. But before we get to him, you can find this show and all the other shows on Audioboom, iTunes, Silver Screen and Roll, Stitcher, TuneIn, and Today's Fast Break. And then make sure you're using the promo code LOLakers at SeatGeek and then on MacWeldon.com. More on that on tomorrow's show. We have been getting people who are submitting the reviews that we asked for last show. Just basically give us a 5-star review on iTunes and say Kobe better.
Send us a screenshot of this review with 5 stars that says just Kobe better, and you will be entered to win a pair of socks from Mack Weldon. And I'm wearing them right now. They're amazing.
Yep. So let's go ahead and jump in.
You don't get this pair of socks. Like, we'll send you a new pair of socks unless you want my socks.
No, but nobody wants. Harrison, come on.
I don't know. I'm feeling like a superstar right now.
All right, so Pete, thanks very much for joining us. How are you doing? How's the preseason treating you? It's been pretty fun. We got to catch a game yesterday. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that was a blast, man. Thank you for making it out, and thanks for having me on the show.
Anytime. And thanks to I believe that was Eric Pincus who you know was initially responsible for getting the tickets and all that. So thanks. That was a lot of fun. It's really fun. To watch a game from a perspective of like if I completely nerd out, if it's just Jen and I that are at a game together and I nerd out and I say like, oh my god, that rotation on the weak side, Jen's just like, what's wrong with you? So it was fun to be able to make those comments and then have somebody be, you know, jump back at me. I think we high fived on a set, right? That actually happened.
You know, they ran an elevator screen for Nick Young and I think I squealed. I think that's what came out of me. So
it was tremendous. The entire vibe.
So at what point did Jen just decide she was going to go wait in the car instead of sitting with you guys? Like, was that like halftime when she was just like, she said she was going to go get some nachos and never came back? Or
so after the game, the valet to get our car back the line for it was forever long. So we just popped our heads into this little canteen afterward and I had a margarita. I think she had a beer. And then the first thing she says to me is, holy crap, there are more people like you.
So, okay, well, first of all, I'm hurt that she doesn't think that I have smart basketball conversations with you. But that's fine.
She's ever really seen us. She's never really seen us, like, watch a basketball game like that. Like, she was there, and yeah, the comments were flying. It was a lot of fun. So, but let's go ahead and jump into today's show. There's a ton to talk about, and this is going to be a really regular occurrence, I would hope, that Pete comes on here. He spends so much time analyzing the game, and he thinks about it from all kinds of different perspectives. Today, what we're going to do is we're going to go through some of Twitter's favorite topics. And then as the year goes along, we'll jump into some of the, you know, the more intricate aspects of these topics. But today we're just going to give an introductory course Think of it as Lakers 101. And then, yeah, we'll just see where the conversation takes us. We're going to talk today about D'Angelo Russell, Julius Randle, Larry Nance Jr., Brandon Ingram, and Jordan Clarkson. So the first place that we're going to start with D'Angelo Russell, and I'm going to, I guess, give the very general question, throw this out there. Pete, are turnovers overvalued, or, you know, are they as big an aspect of the game that we should be worried about that Twitter makes it out to be so far?
You know, from an individual's perspective, I really don't think so. It's all a function of how much do you handle the ball. And a guy like Russell has the ball in his hands quite a bit. So, you know, there's a balance between protecting the ball and shot creation. And if you're too conservative, you're leaving points out on the floor where you haven't ventured toward an opportunity. And obviously, if you're too aggressive, you're going to make dumb plays and try to pass the ball into small windows. Russell is striking a better balance as time goes on. He has a couple of things that concern me. One, he's a little bit lackadaisical with the ball. It's not a matter of not having the ball handling capability, but there will be some times where, you know, say a big will switch out onto him, and he doesn't think for a second that that guy is going to, that power forward or whatever, is going to, you know, poke the ball away. And so he's a little loose with his handle. It's more of a I don't respect you type of way than it is a, you know, he can't handle the ball. My bigger concern, which I think is a matter of working more with a player development coach, is when he decides to drive to the basket, he doesn't really have breaks, meaning that, you know, he'll make that decision that, hey, I can get to the hoop. And if somebody cuts him off, he's not on balance to the point where he can pull up and, you know, reverse pivot and, you know, pass the ball out of danger. So he'll find himself kind of under the basket, jumping in the air and trying to get the ball through the trees, and, you know, it'll get deflected. That being said, a lot of the defensive coverages that, you know, we're only four games into the preseason, only halfway done. But a lot of those defensive coverages that he's been seeing have been, specifically in the pick and roll, have been soft edges, meaning that the big man hangs back. And what you're going to see out of that is more of a high volume shooter rather than a guy who playmakes and passes the ball quite a bit. It's also a function of the system that they're running, in that, you know, it's the passing and the distributing the ball is more distributed evenly throughout the roster than just with your quote unquote point guard.
Harrison, I'm not going to call it lazy, because I think that's it's too pejorative a term to give to the analysis, but the common theme here is that he isn't, D'Angelo Russell isn't a true point guard. And I guess I can't help but roll my eyes when I see that there, but I think it's I think it'd be constructive to start with, what does that mean?
Right? Yeah.
What does a true point guard actually mean, so that we can try to figure out, is he or does it even matter? So Harrison, what does true point guard mean to you?
I think true point guard to me, at least as far as the narrative goes, seems to just basically mean that just a point guard who is, whether they actually are or not, but the idea of them is that they're always looking to set their teammates up first, and they're super unselfish. They're, you know, they almost never even think about scoring. And I think the reason that Russell gets called not a true point guard so often is because he has the ability to score, and he's more than willing to take advantage of it if teams give him space. And so I think that that's probably going to continue to be a criticism of him. But that, I mean, that's just, I think it's honestly, like, you didn't want to call it lazy, but I will. I mean, it's just like, I think it's just a talking point, really. I think it's just something, it's something for people to debate instead of getting into the real stuff that's happening on the floor. It's like, let's argue whether or not he's a true point guard, rather than, you know, how he could better set up his teammates, or maybe why he's getting turnovers, or those types of things.
Pete, I guess I'll lob the same kind of question at you, because I don't know. I would add to the true point guard definition for me, I guess I would add to it that, like, they literally can't do anything else. Like, it's a matter of talent. When I think somebody says, you know, so-and-so is a true point guard, they never talk about the most talented guys out there. And like I said, I think it becomes this pejorative term where it can come across as this negative term. And I don't think that necessarily has to be the case. So I guess, yeah, where would you go with when you hear true point guard? What's the first thing that kind of comes to your mind?
I think of a different era of basketball. Mm. It's really not it's an antiquated term that, especially in these style of play where, you know, the Spurs are running motion weak and the Lakers or Spurs motion weak, motion strong, all that, the Golden State running flow offense and all of that. The ball's moving, every player's touching it, every player has read and react responsibilities. And the term true point guard comes from a different era where you're point guard is the guy who dominated the basketball. You have a few of those left over, like a Rondo type of player, you know, that is great at setting up other guys off of the ball. But when you only have one point of attack, it's easy to defend, you know, when you know this guy does this and this guy does that. And I think that, you know, one of the beautiful things about basketball is that any position can be a dominant player, you know, whereas and really have that sort of impact on the game. Whereas in other sports, you know, baseball, if you have a great starting pitcher going that night, you know, that's the guy that's going to dominate the game. You really can't do much in the NFL if you don't have a great quarterback, you know, whereas in the NBA, that those responsibilities can be distributed over amongst a lot of guys. And, you know, look at the Warriors last year. You had Draymond Green, what, eighth in the league in assists. Heck, even last night, you know, Lillard dropped 30 points but only had 3 assists. I doubt Trailblazer fans are complaining about him not being a true point guard after a performance like last night, you know?
Right. I guess, and I'll put a seal on this, the way I kind of look at it as you only hear that come out when said point guard doesn't play well.
Right.
And I think that was something that Russell kind of touched on last night. He said explicitly in the media just that that, you know, if I make a couple different shots, then it's a different story. And he's absolutely right. If he hits that three, even if he just hits that one three at the end of regulation, then all of the headlines are about how he's just like Kobe. And even if he has like a couple, if he has like an off night, he still comes through in the clutch. And it's just, you know, whether you make or miss a couple shots, that shouldn't necessarily define what type of player you are.
That's a perfect segue to the next thing we were going to talk about with Russell, and it's his shooting, right? It's you know, people are saying, you know, why is he shooting so much even on an off night? And then I thought it was great. Like, this is the kind of thing that the prior coach would not have done, right? When he comes out and he says that, or he would have done, but he wouldn't have done it with somebody like Russell, where... after a game like that, it wouldn't be, oh, I trust Russell to take those shots. We need him to continue to take those shots. They were good ones, and they just didn't happen to fall. Whereas in prior years, in the last couple of years, it would be, honestly, I think, you know, Russell needs to focus more on getting his team involved and getting the ball in Kobe's hands.
Again, Russell got benched last year for trying to take over a game.
That's right.
So, was the cited reason. So, yeah, I think you're right on.
So, and I guess where I was going to go with that is, and Pete, the kind of shots that he was taking last night. Now, I think there's some – the one valid criticism that I think I saw somewhere on Twitter, or I don't know if it was some random thought that I had, but I wish he would have gotten, you know, done a little bit more to try to get to the line. But even with that, like, you and I were watching, and I think I explicitly said it'd be nice if he starts getting a couple of those superstar calls, because getting right to the free throw line really helps with that shot. Did you ever feel like, you know, maybe he should, you know, try to get the ball to other players while you know, during the game last night or in other games during the preseason?
You know, I did a breakdown of the game tonight. I released it, you know, about an hour ago, and you know, I chart all of the player shots and whatnot, and of the 21 shots that he took, I thought that two of them were bad shots, where he should have either hit Mozgov with a pocket pass or the other one escapes me. He actually hit 4 shots in the paint. He had a couple of kind of nifty moves around the basket. So I think that's all you can really ask for is, you know, if you want a guy to draw free throws, it's kind of another way of saying go to the basket if your jumper's not falling. Mm-hmm. And you know, maybe you'll draw contact down there. And like you said, yeah, there were a couple of times where there were some 50-50 calls that he probably could have gotten and didn't. So I was actually happy with his level of aggression and just the type of shots that he's taking. It's his job is to read the defense. And in a very simple respect, if he's got one guy on him, his job is to score on them. If he draws a second defender, his job is to move it. And I feel like he's doing that. It's just the defensive coverages that he's seeing are more conducive to him taking a high volume of shots rather than, you know, passing the ball to the roll man or skipping to the weak side or something like that.
And it makes sense, right? If I'm coaching against the Lakers right now, I'm gonna ask, I'm gonna see if Russell can actually beat my team, right? Like it doesn't make much sense. Like if you have guys like Lou Alding and Timofey Mozgov who have, you know, shown that they can, I wouldn't say carry teams offensively, obviously, but they have shown a higher proclivity to, you know, Luol Deng has been a really good, or at least a pretty good to really good spot-up shooter, and Timofey Mozgov can finish around the rim. I'm going to see if this unproven second-year guy can go out there and really affect the game. Harrison, this is, I'm kind of pulling this out of thin air, but
you like to do this to me, that's fine.
But the thought that's kind of, you know, it keeps coming to mind is the, you know, here's why counting stats don't tell enough of the story, right? Because the kind of plays that Pete's talking about here, you know, that Russell is expected to make aren't always going to, you know, like those passes aren't going to be assists. They're going to be hockey assists, which is why I think that should be a stat that eventually it'd be nice to see kept a little bit more widely around the league. Or, you know, the shots he takes. You know, the number of shots, to me, don't tell the whole story because we aren't defining what are good shots in there. So I guess I'm making a plea, and I guess I'm asking if you can build on it. Why, you know, why is so much analysis based off of these counting stats? Is that, again, just like the true point guard thing, is that just too easy?
I think it is to some degree. I mean, the main reason that I think so much analysis is based off of those is because those are what's always been used. They were, I mean, when those stats first started being kept, those were the advanced stats. Those were like, that was a new thing that you could keep track of all this information. And I think that we've grown in the amount of information that we keep, but how much it's disseminated hasn't necessarily changed. And I think, I forget who it was for ESPN, but somebody wrote a really good article about how advanced stats aren't all that advanced. They're just called advanced stats because they aren't shown in the traditional box scores. And so I think some of that is on us as media to use the more advanced stats more often and explain to, not just use them to throw them out and seem smart, but explain to them, to people, what they mean and why they're a better measurement of a player's efficiency and that type of thing. And it's like, just on the counting stats, outside of shots, I think getting back to the turnovers like we talked about, you know, that's a pretty simplistic counting stat. And if you just go to NBA.com and you look at the top 10 guys in turnovers last year, you'd think that that was a good stat to have. Mm-hmm. Because you roll down the list and it's like, it's number one is James Harden. You got Russell Westbrook, John Wall, Rajon Rondo. Okay, we missed one. But DeMarcus Cousins, Tony Roten randomly in there, Eric Bledsoe, Kevin Durant, Brandon Knight, and Stephen Curry. And then if you go down two more to the, you make it top 12, then it's Paul George, LeBron James, and then 13 is not a true point guard, Damian Lillard, who's still considered pretty good. Go to 14, you got Emmanuel Mudiay, Russell's classmate. So, you know, it's like some of these players that are a lot of those names, those are the best players in the league. And I think to some degree, turnovers are going to be a high usage. I'm not coining this term right now. I've heard other people use it, but they're almost like a creativity tax. Mm-hmm. It's like if you're going to be one of the best players who makes the most daring passes and gets the most defensive attention on you, you're just going to have some turnovers that other players wouldn't necessarily have because they're put in easier situations to succeed.
Right. And the analogy that I kind of come back to, and I'm going to, you know, because I equate being a point guard in the NBA to being a quarterback in the NFL. It's a really easy one. I'm not the first. I won't be the last. it's so maddening to me when you're watching on Sundays and it's like a third and, you know, it's a third and seven or it's a third and eight or something like that. And you see the quarterback dump down 2 yards past the line of scrimmage. And you're thinking to yourself, there's no way you're putting your running back in a tough spot there. And it's just because, you know, the NFL has become so risk-averse that a throw down the field is seen as another opportunity for the secondary to pick off that pass. And you look at the top quarterbacks who are willing to make those throws, the Rodgers, the guy who really comes to mind is Ben Roethlisberger or whatever. And you look at these quarterbacks who are higher up on those turnover stats, and it's like, yeah, it's because of the style that they play. And not just it's not just from a pure productivity standpoint, but aesthetically, it's nice when Russell threads the needle and you know the ball just gets past. It's a game of inches, and it just gets past the defender and it fits in the crack there. If the ball tip bounces weird, then that pass doesn't happen. And I don't know if that's necessarily an altogether true criticism. I guess the last thing that we'll talk about with Russell here, and it's regarding I didn't bring this up before we went on the show, but the defense that he plays, I don't think it's been really a talking point so far how not bad he's been. Is that fair to say, Pete? It's nice that, you know, to go from last year where he was pretty bad to where he's been this year, where it's like, yeah, you know, he makes mistakes, but overall it's been nice that he hasn't been awful.
Yeah, he was good in the first three games, and he was pretty bad last night. From watching on the tape, I don't think he communicates particularly well with teammates. There are a couple of situations where, you know, he decided to switch, and then his teammates, like, with their body language kind of said, oh, yeah, okay, I'm going to switch now. And they weren't aware that that's what he was looking to do. I think he may have gotten a little discouraged with his jumper not falling. He missed some help defense responsibilities last night around the basket. But that being said, in the totality of the preseason so far, he's been a solid defender. You know, he's been really good on the ball, and when he wants to be, he's very attentive off of the ball. He understands what he's supposed to be doing. His focus comes and goes. So up until last night, I was very happy with his defense, and then last night was not so good.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's pretty tough to guard Lillard.
even beyond that, though, had some, he was actually doing his job for the most part on Lillard. It was more on, you know, on switches, not getting in front of bigs, you know, and allowing baskets around the hoop where he just has to drop to the level of the ball and didn't do it.
Absolutely. All right. So we'll move on now to Julius Randle, and I'll start with you, Harrison. Now, Pete and I, we had a conversation, and then Pete mentions it in the breakdown from last night, that aired last night, for those of you listening today, Wednesday. But
Thursday.
Is it Thursday?
Thursday. Today, this is our Thursday show. You can find Pete's most recent Laker Film Room breakdown. I'm sure that it'll be on Twitter tomorrow as well.
Yep, absolutely. So I'm getting old. But Pete and I, while the game was going on, Pete made the point of how slow Randle is playing in transition, and he meant that in a really positive way. So, you know, have you noticed the same trend? And do you think that's something that you know has been an active decision that he's made?
I don't know if the slowness is something that necessarily jumped out at me, but it just seems like he's more willing to pass in transition. Whereas last year it was just, if Randle started running the floor, it pretty much seemed like you knew that he was putting his head down, he was looking at the ball, and he was going straight to the rim, no matter how many defenders were in his way, no matter if there was a teammate behind the arc or whatever, he was just going. And from watching the games, and then also from watching Pete's videos, frankly, you just see a lot that he's more willing to kind of leave the ball off for a trailer, kind of hit the right guy on the wing as he's coming down the floor. And I just think we saw it even towards the end of last year. His assist numbers bumped up in a couple games. He had a couple games where he had like career highs in assists, and again, so I guess season highs in assists. But I mean, I wrote about it last year, and it looks like it's something that he's improved on even more over the summer.
Pete, I guess another way we can put it is when he has the ball in transition, it's with a purpose, right? Like I noticed the other thing that we kind of talked about while we were watching was he's dribbling right at defenders, you know, especially guys on the wing, you know, with the anticipation of, all right, just come towards me. I'm going to dribble right at your defender. I'm going to drop the ball off. And then now it's up to you to make that, you know, you either take the shot right behind me or take another dribble or two and create for somebody else. And, you know, if he continues to play with that kind of purpose there, it gets pretty hard to make the argument that Nance belongs there. But if, you know, is there something, can he continue with the improvement here is my question. Is there even more that he could do in those situations in transition?
You know, I've been very happy. Purposeful is a great word to use. Deliberate is another one that comes to mind. Just, you know, in a very simple sense, have we even seen him run anybody over in transition? Right. Which was, you know, kind of a frequent, frequent happening last year. And, he's going into the paint knowing that, hey, my job is to suck in the defense and kick it out. He also had a play last night that I really loved where he kind of his pet move over these last few games has been, to suck in the defense and either flip it behind his back or between his legs or something to that trailing shooter. And defenders have started to like pick up on that. And he did that. He came up the middle of the court and he wanted to do that with Russell trailing right behind him. And the defender had sniffed that out. But he was going slowly enough or purposefully enough to where he recognized that. And then he said, well, if that defender's behind me, that means I've got Myers Leonard in front of me who doesn't have the foot speed to keep up with me. So then he continued all the way to the rim and he got a basket out of it. In terms of him continuing to improve in transition, you know, I think that's going to be more of a function of the other Lakers learning how to run proper transition lanes and get to spots where, you know, if you watch LeBron play, especially in transition, he doesn't even really throw it to a guy. He throws it to a spot. And that's why he's able to whip it across from one, you know, the strong side to the weak side, right to a guy, because he knows exactly where those guys are going to be. And so as Laker forwards and guards become better at running transition lanes, Randall's going to be capable of distributing more in having better distribution in terms of where the ball goes.
I completely agree. Harrison, you know, it's we've had this conversation, I think, what are we going on, 73 different times now.
I mean, Pete, next year you're gonna have to come on a gondola with us in Vegas and discuss Larry Nance Jr. versus Julius Randle, despite the fact that neither of them will likely be in Vegas. But we'll head out there and we'll argue about it on a gondola because that's just our tradition now.
So I guess for me, it comes down to, and this was a point that I made on Twitter, and it was in response to, I think it was Andrew Lynch wrote a Fox article today saying that the Lakers should trade Julius Randle and cited Larry Nance Jr.
Oh, wait, somebody wrote an article saying that the Lakers should make a trade?
It's crazy.
That's really surprising. I wonder why. It's not like Lakers trade gets good SEO engagement or something. Like,
I think from now on, we should just name all our shows Laker Trade. Like, we should be the Laker Trade podcast.
Yeah, we should be the Laker Trade Rumors podcast.
But when I'm watching Randle there in transition, and he has the ball, especially, like, what I've been really impressed with is his ability to handle the ball in transition going to his right. Like, that was a non-occurrence.
He's had multiple games now where he's been staring at that right hand, like, doing the it's alive look. Mm-hmm. Like, he's just every single – I love it. It's my favorite running subplot of Lakers games is waiting for Randle after he makes a basket with his right hand. Stu freaks out and says, like, he's like, oh man, he used the right. and then they cut to Randle just like looking at his hand wide-eyed, like, oh my god, this thing exists. I have a right hand. I never knew.
I've always
discovering it for the first time.
I've always liked, you know, because I'm left-handed and I've preferred to handle the ball with my right hand because that keeps my left hand more free to, you know, as soon as my left hand touches the ball, it's with a purpose, you know, and when I have
And we saw that purpose out in Vegas. I'll tweet the video again tomorrow of Anthony's basketball.
Thanks. I greatly appreciate that. But I'm watching that with Randall where in transition, if he has the ball in his left hand and then his left hand or in his right hand, and the left hand touches the ball, he now has a purpose with that. I'm wondering, I guess I'll come back to you, Pete, because this feels like a coaching
adjustment. Yeah, I was going to say, this is a Pete question. This is not a Harrison question.
But it feels like a coaching adjustment of, all right, in order to keep you under control, let's see how well you can handle the ball with your right hand so that when it does touch your left hand and you do make your mind up, you're doing it later than you did, you know, last season, which I think prevents him from running people over. Am I on the right track there, would you say, or do you think it's just something that's kind of happened so far?
No, absolutely. That's something that, you know, a guy like that, especially if you watched him play in high school or AAU ball, he very much was a point guard type of player. And so a guy like that who's been handling the ball as long as he has, for that to start to develop, that's absolutely player development. Going on over the summer. As a fellow lefty who likes to dribble the ball with his right hand, I very much understand where you're coming from, Anthony, in terms of being able to go back to your left with purpose. And that's something that I've seen with him as well, where he'll go right and set players up to go back left.
Mm-hmm.
Although for some reason, I feel like left-handed players are the only ones that are ever marked as only going in one direction, whether it's Ginobili or Randall or Lamar Odom. You never hear about right-hand dominant guys that only go right. I mean, can you think of one?
No, I can't. You know what? I think that that's because it stands out so much more because there are so many fewer like left-handed players that them doing something that's really traditional just with their correct hand is the opposite one for most people. I think it stands out visually a little bit more. So I think they probably get tagged with that a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but with Randall, that's absolutely something he's been working with player development coaches on and becoming more deliberate. I would imagine there's some tape being watched to facilitate that as well. You know, you show a guy tape of him running over people for 5 minutes, you know, he'll start to get the idea of what's going wrong and where his alternatives he has, you know, than that. So
I'd like to imagine that they had to explain to him that they were showing him that like it was a bad thing. Like he was just really excited about watching highlights of him running at like trucking guys. And they're like, no, Julius, that's I know it's fun, but you can't like you gotta hold back on going full Hulk on the defenses.
He does seem to relish, and anytime he gets an opportunity,
he loves the contact. I'm not trying to imply that he's dumb or something. I just think that he really likes running into guys. That probably kills him. That's an offensive foul.
Yeah, I can't lie. I really enjoy it when you watch him when he runs into a guy, and then that guy they kind of pan on that guy's face, and they have to like catch his, you know, that guy catches his breath, like, oh my god, that hurt so bad, you know. That's a little minor thing to really watch for. The other tendency that I've noticed, and this is more on the negative side, Pete, and it's on the defensive end with Randall, is his arm activity on defense is really telling of how a defensive play is going to play out for him. Where, and this is obviously audio, so I'll try to talk it out. But if you watch him, and if he starts a play with his hands down at his side, there's a much higher, exponentially greater chance that he's going to make some kind of, he's not going to rotate in time. He's not going to, you know, somebody's going to beat him for a position. Is this a trend? You've obviously watched a lot more video than I have in your breakdowns. Have you noticed a similar trend there? Or is it just a general, you know, he's just going to make mistakes when he's going to make mistakes?
No, you're absolutely on the right track. You know, he's inconsistent with his arm position, and he likes to reach a lot. And he on his post defense, he'll stand too upright, and he's susceptible to spin moves, and he'll draw fouls off of that. On the positive side, though, the last night's game against Portland was one of the best defensive games that I've seen from him, mm-hmm. and both in terms of rotations and individual fundamentals like hand position. He had one play where he rotated from one side of the court to the other twice to protect the rim, and he did it with his hands, you know, at you know waist level or higher rather than down at his side. Mm-hmm. So. It's something that, you know, at this level of basketball, all of these guys have heard all of the fundamentals that you can think of at, more than once. I think what happens, especially with a guy like Randall, and again, I harken back to his high school and AAU days. He was a monster in high school. Yeah. And AAU. And I think that guys like that hear coaches, you know, preach fundamentals, and it doesn't really sink in until they fail, until they do poorly at something, you know, and then they realize, oh, I need to implement this if I'm going to be successful. So I think that I'm noticing improvements in, first off, his effort level on the defensive end, which is true team-wide. They're just way more engaged in the overall process than they were last year for a multitude of reasons. But also I'm starting to see the application of some of those fundamentals. And now, mind you, it's inconsistent. It's like his shooting form, right? We were commenting last night where, you know, sometimes his free throws look great and they've got great arc on them. And sometimes, you know, if it, like you said, if it even touches the rim, it's going to be a miss because it's so flat. The same is true on the defensive end, where there are times where he has his hands in the correct position, he's in a good defensive stance, and there are times where he resorts back to the way he played basketball for the first 20 years of his life. And that's going to be an ongoing process of breaking those habits, but he is making progress.
Harrison, so this is something that, you know, this is more narrative driven, but I've noticed a lot, you know, one of the criticisms of Randall is, you know, that the actual tools that he has to be a defender. And that's where I find myself disagreeing the most vehemently, is I actually think he has those tools, right? Would you agree?
I think in some ways yes, in some ways no. I think that as far, I mean, if you listen to people talk about his arms, our listeners in the Silver Screen and Roll comment section, and, you know, even people that don't listen to the show in there, they have kind of nicknamed him J-Rex, because the way that he's described, you'd think that he had T-Rex arms. Like, his arms were just, like, massively, like they were misshaped. Like, he had infant arms that were not proportional to his body. And, like, yeah, he doesn't have the greatest wingspan for someone his height. But, I mean, it's not like he's not running out there with, like, a child's arms. Like, he's capable. So I think from that perspective, he's not going to be like he's not, as much as we like to joke that he's the next Draymond Green, he's not going to be the next Draymond Green as far as like a defender that can defend the rim as a small ball five, I think. But there are a lot of other things that I think he can do well defensively. I think that he can be physical with guys. I think that he has the tools to be able to stay in front of guys laterally.
Yeah. I completely his foot speed especially is something that I come back to. Pete, if you were in charge of developing him as a defender, just like Harrison said with his wingspan, I don't think he's going to necessarily meet, and he's not really that big of a leaper either, so I don't think he's really going to meet anybody up at the rim. But wouldn't you just spend the whole time focusing on, you know, all right, focus on stripping people while the ball is coming up, right? Just do that as much as you possibly can. And he has two guys on his team right now, and we'll see how long this lasts because Meta might not, you know, hang around for too much longer. But he has two guys in the Waldang and Metal World Peace who are really good at that very thing, right? So have you noticed him, you know, in terms of the activity that he has with his hands, is he getting, you know, his hands on you know, deflections while the ball's coming up more often? Or is that still a work in progress? Well, it's obviously still a work in progress, but yeah.
Yeah, That wouldn't necessarily be the angle that I would take from what the tools that he has or what that can manifest on the court. He had a nice block in last night's game, but you guys touched on it, each of you. He's got great feet, and the first part of my video in the recap of last night's game was kind of the difficulty that Mozgov has in defending pick and rolls. And against a guy like Lillard, it's the same reason that Russell killed the Nuggets pick and roll defensive coverage, is that a guy like Nurkic had to hang back in the paint. And so anytime a guard can shoot a pull-up three and is effective at that, that center is very difficult to keep on the floor. Mm-hmm. And a lot of both for Lillard's points individually, or the chain reaction that it caused points for others, Mozgov had a hard time in those pick and roll coverages, and that was a big reason why he didn't play for Cleveland as well. A guy like Randall, and I would love to see him get some minutes as the backup five. A guy like Randall can competently stay in front of perimeter players. Mm-hmm. Gives you the flexibility to be able to either switch or hedge and recover or blitz pick and rolls in ways that you just can't do with guys like Mozgov or Zubats or guys like that. And when he really decides that he wants to lock in on a perimeter player, he does a really great job. Now, that doesn't mean that he's going to, you know, he's going to lock up Damian Lillard or Steph Curry or anything like that. But it's kind of like what we saw in the playoffs last year with guys like Steven Adams or Tristan Thompson, being able to switch onto those guys and be competent. And it really slows down ball movement. It slows down player movement if you're able to switch and say, hey, this guy has to score on me in isolation. That's where I really see him. Like you guys said, he's not, you know, he's not freakishly misshaping, you know, like Harrison said, with his arms. But that's really not where his defensive future is. His defensive future is blowing up pick and roll games. And I really want to see him improve to that end. And I haven't seen him involved in enough of those this preseason to make a determination one way or another. But I saw some of it last year, and I really want to see more of it going forward.
He played some small ball five last night, right? They had him out there at the small ball five last night, and that was a fun lineup. I was actually pretty impressed with the lineups that were out there on the court last night, and it's fun that, yeah, I mean, the other thing too is, you know, in years past, you would watch, you know, pick and roll coverage, and it was the same exact coverage every single time. You know, it was very rare that you would really noticeably see some different, you know, are they trapping hard off of it? Are they soft hedging? Or, you know, how are they going to handle this? If they start one way in a game, they're probably going to play with that same defense, you know, throughout the game. And last night, and this is from as much as you can tell watching, you know, live, which isn't always the best way, but throughout this preseason and last night in particular, you saw multiple, you know, treatments of that pick and roll in successive possessions, and that was a lot of fun. And then this is where my brain goes in these shows, but to those who were having a rough day, picture a T-Rex trying to make his bed, and your day just happens to, it brightens up. It's a let's go ahead and let's move on. And it just happens that Harrison doesn't have a made bed behind him, so that's even better.
I don't even. Sometimes I just don't even know what to say to you when you go to these places.
Neither do I. Neither do I. It's just like my teachers in grade schools. All right, so we'll move on now to somebody who, you know, in terms of the narrative, people would think that he was built and developed in a laboratory to play defense in the NBA, and that would be Larry Nance Jr.
Oh, the Lakers' other Draymond Green, who might be their best player, according to according to some people.
Which was, I found that pretty hilarious. But one thing I noticed last night, and I've noticed now a couple nights, is it's really hard not to notice when Julius Randle is on the court. Whereas sometimes you kind of have to remind yourself, and Nance will make plays that, you know, he'll meet somebody at the rim, or he'll get way above the rim for a rebound, or he'll get his hand on a deflection. But in between those plays, it's really easy to forget that he's on the court. And my question, Pete, is: do you think that's a product of utilization? Do you think that's a schematic thing, or do you think it's a skill set that allows one thing to happen for one player and vice versa?
I think that he's somebody who his defensive presence kind of activates the rest of his game. One way that I'm able to tell how much a guy's done in a game has been since, you know, I started making these videos. I look to see who has the most raw footage. You know, I don't include every play that every player makes, but I will start out by chopping up every play that has any significance at all. And in the first two games, Nance was actually the leader in the amount of minutes of raw footage. And in the last,
you gotta start, I'm sorry to cut you off, but you gotta start like releasing this list like in screen grabs. You gotta like put the timeout of like which player ended up with the most raw footage in this week's video.
You know, that's a good idea. Each video is takes between about 10 to 12 hours, and that's after it's after the download time. And I'm trying to, you know, shave that down for my own sanity and for productivity's sake. And I've got some ideas. You know, one of the things I want to do is come out with a list of each set that the Lakers ran in a particular game and which ones were effective and which ones weren't. So say they ran motion weak 10 times and they scored 12 points out of it. So 1.2 points per possession, you know. And so that's one of the things I want to do. Anyway, I digress. But, yeah, I will try and apply that, Harrison. Thank you. Anyhow, yeah, Nance had a ton of raw footage in the first couple of games, especially in help defense. He was somebody that was really mindful of his teammates getting beat, of the of where he needed to rotate over, and he just closed out like a madman. I loved it. And then in these last couple of games, it's been really hard, you know, to find that footage. I wish I had some sort of, you know, thoughtful and prescient answer to why he fades into the background from time to time, but I really don't. Maybe it's a stamina thing. Maybe it's relative to his matchup. One thing about Portland is that their bigs are more of the, you know, kind of grab rebounds, set screens, and clean up types. And he didn't have as many opportunities as a result of that. But I'm a big Larry Nance fan. I like him quite a bit. I think he's got a great IQ. I do think that it's a legitimate debate between him and Randall. However, I think that, you know, Nance's floor is higher and his ceiling is lower than Randall. And I think the idea of trading either of them at this point, outside of, you know, some ridiculous offer, I think it's silly. I would like to see them playing together, quite frankly, in that idea of Randall being a guy who can really defend pick and rolls and switch. Nance can too. And Nance is developing a jump shot as well. And I don't know. I think that'd be a fun lineup with Nance at the four and Randall at the five, or vice versa, however you wanted to do it. And I don't think they've been set up as rivals, and I don't think they necessarily have to be.
I completely agree. Harrison, one thing that was talked about, I'm not going to go into the whole, you know, is motor a skill thing? Because I don't necessarily think that's even in debate anymore. But the one thing that Contrarian Barbarian brought up in passing today was the one concern with Larry Nance Jr. is style of play, and if that's conducive to actually play starters' minutes. Because he, like Pete said, he plays like a madman. When he not like the TV show that can be, you know, pretty boring, but when you're watching him play out there, and when he's the most successful, he's literally everywhere. And would you say that, you know, as a concern, if he does start joining that starting unit, or do you think that is something that might be keeping him from joining that starting unit, is how he plays and how much he would have to play that way?
You know, that's actually an interesting angle that I hadn't thought a whole lot about before, and I'm not just saying this just to give myself more time to think about it, but I think that, I think maybe that has something to do with it. I don't know if they're thinking that far ahead about it. I think it's possible. I think as far as him fading into the background sometimes, I mean, my argument for it would be that he's just a lower usage, less flashy player. So if he's not making as many, he's not going to have the ball in his hands a ton. So when he's making a lot of good defensive plays, you notice him. But if they're like, if he's not having a standout game defensively, and he doesn't have one or two of those big dunks, or he doesn't hit like a couple jumpers or something where people can just say, oh, you know, I really like the way that he spaces the floor, then I think it's less noticeable than when Randall is, say, like committing offensive fouls or turning the ball over or making an error defensively where he just forgets about his guy and it leads to a dunk or something. I just think that Nance's mistakes and kind of trials and tribulations are less visible than Randall's because Randall has the ball in his hands more.
Yep, I agree with everything that was said there, and yeah, that's it's an interesting part. I wonder if that is something that the coaching staff has thought about regarding Nance's, just the amount that he has to how hard he has to play to be successful out there. The next guy we're going to talk about is Brandon Ingram, and I'm not going to say that he's been disappointing because anybody who was really expecting very much from a 19-year-old playing in the NBA, I kind of think you kind of have to check yourself there a little bit.
But even if Kevin Durant said that he was more advanced than he was at his age, because
that's totally the Lakers' fault that Kevin Durant would say that, by the way.
Yeah.
but I think, Harrison, you put it really well when we were getting ready for the show, so I'll let you lob the question out there. You know, the topic that we are going to discuss here is you know, I guess, given the look of confusion on your face.
Oh, no. I remembered, but for a second I was like, oh, no, I forgot what I said. But no, Pete, I think the advantage of having you on is that, like Anthony said, you know, you and you, like you explained with I had no idea it actually took you 10 to 12 hours to make those videos. That's insane. And, you know, you watch far more film than either of us. We just we're idiots who hop on a camera and talk after games.
I don't know.
But
about
so
that.
You cut up all this video, and you know, everybody is always telling us, don't worry about Brandon Ingram. He's young. We talk about it. The Lakers are talking about it. But I guess I should get into you. Why should people not be like? Let's get into like why specifically should people not be worried about Brandon Ingram outside of just the age thing? Like, what is he doing well in your eyes?
So he walks into the NBA as a plus defender, which is a remarkable thing to say about a 19-year-old. He really understands rotations, and it's not just a matter of he has long arms and will occasionally block a shot. Like, he's in the correct position, and he has a 7'4" wingspan, and he has a great motor that, and a willingness to help out his teammates. So it's easy to look at his offensive numbers and they're ugly. There's no two ways about it, but he walks in as a plus defender and will not hurt you on the court in that respect. On the offensive end, there are a couple of adjustments that he needs to make. At Duke, he actually played a lot of power forward. And at Duke, they run a lot of horns. And what that means relative to Ingram is that he was on the elbow a lot at the corner of the free throw line and making a lot of plays, out of that. He was more frequently a screen setter than a screen user. And he was mostly getting catches where he would get catches out of triple threat position, where he had his dribble still alive and he'd use jab steps and rip throughs and pump fakes and things like that. Playing the small forward position with the Lakers, which is what he's doing more, he's having to be be the guard in pick and roll situations. He's having to use footwork to curl around screens, things that he's done before, but he hasn't done at a high level, and it wasn't what made him the second pick in the draft. I believe that, and this is probably an unpopular opinion in Lakerland, I believe his eventual position is at power forward, despite his weight. I think he's an ideal stretch four going forward. So he's learning a lot of new skill sets. He's also learning where his shots come from. There are a lot of plays. For example, he made a really nice pump fake, rip through, and crossover step baseline in last night's game. And he drew a second and even a third defender. And he could have either passed to Anthony Brown in the opposite corner. He had Nance behind him, or he had the right pass was to Tariq Black under the basket for a dunk. The only guy who was covered was Huertas. And in he's so sped up mentally right now, that was the guy that he passed it to, and it was a turnover. So he's learning how, you know, where his shots come from, how he's going to go about getting those shots. And he's got a lot of footwork and a lot of film work, frankly, that he's going to need to do in order to get up to that point. I'd like to see him at least knock down standstill catch and shoot threes. That's my hope for him on the offensive end from this season, and everything else is gravy.
So, follow-up question, how many more shots does he miss before we just declare him a bust?
I'd say three or four at the most.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the ratio is getting out of control. I mean, at some point you have to be, you got to make shots. You're a Laker, right? Like, he has Kobe's locker.
And, you know, you
Anthony
think
Brown just took the biggest swig of whiskey ever. No, I will say this though. One thing that I was concerned about with Ingram as he was coming in because of that weight was, you know, getting moved off of his spot, you know, if he was playing defense, getting bodied up and you know, being walked under the basket. But I really haven't noticed that as much. Again, Pete, with the amount that you're watching there, it stood out to me while I was watching Marcelo Huertas play that he's giving up one or two steps per play, I would say. You know, that if he wants the ball, if you want, you know, to start the play from, we'll just say, the three-point line, he's starting it from 2 or 3 feet beyond the three-point line just because he isn't able to muscle his way into a spot, or he gets muscled off of said spot. Have you noticed? I haven't noticed it as much with Ingram, but has that been something that you've seen in the tape?
The area where I've seen it the most is actually on the defensive boards. Mm-hmm. If he ends up kind of amongst the trees down low, he can get bodied up a bit. But all in all, no, it's really not a much of a factor in his game.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree. And I think Luke said something to that effect today, right, Harrison? He compared him to Ariza.
Yeah, he compared him to Ariza. He said that was last night. He said that he was wiry and strong. And then he actually went on a podcast. I don't think that it was filmed like last night or anything. I think it was filmed earlier this season, but I'm not sure. But I listened to, he made a podcast appearance on Bleacher Report's Open Run. So Luke, you're doing podcasts now. You should come on ours next. I'm sure we're next on the list. But he was comparing Ingram to Andre Iguodala, and he was saying that he kind of put them in contact with each other, and he sees that as a guy that Ingram could play similarly to. So I think that they're, and it just seems like overall they're focusing him more on the defensive end, which I think is really important, because at some point the Lakers have to get some plus defenders. And like, as much as we hope that Russell and Randall and all and Clarkson and all these guys continue to improve at the rate that they are, like, you know, like, he is already coming in, like Pete said, in his rookie year as a plus defender.
You know, and to further that Iguodala comparison, I, you know, especially in this style of play, it's much smoother when you have front court initiators, guys who can pass, guys who can set up the offense. We've seen him bring the ball up court a couple of times, and I hadn't heard that about getting him in touch with Iguodala, and I love that, because I think that's somebody that if Ingram can have similar offensive responsibilities, along with learning what Iguodala does on the defensive end, that frees up both Russell and Clarkson and other guards to be able to run so much more in you know, different and better action off of the ball without having to have the responsibility of, you know, Russell curling around a handoff every time or Clarkson having to run a pick and roll, you know, in order to get into the paint. They can use off-ball screens a lot more.
Completely agree. All right, so we'll move on then finally to Jordan Clarkson, and the entire story surrounding Clarkson so far has been his coming off of the bench. But for me, what I think is way more important than when he starts playing, you know, when his game actually starts, is the way he plays when he's actually on the court. And his defense has been something that's really stood out to me. And when he is on the court, I don't think it's that much of a stretch to say that he's been, I would say, the Lakers, you know, best overall player. I think Russell has hit higher highs, but in general, I've liked Jordan Clarkson's game the most while he's been on the court. Would you agree there? And then as far as his defense, his fundamentals needed to improve greatly. Have you seen the kind of steps that he needed to take forward defensively, Pete?
Yeah, you know, I've been I couldn't be happier with Clarkson's defense right now. I made a video analyzing his defense because it was a big topic of conversation amongst Laker fans. And it was kind of under the premise that, hey, we all know he's a pretty bad defender and these are the reasons why. And, you know, of course, he starts out this preseason just playing great defense. And, you know, I'm getting YouTube comments like, oh, you're an idiot. You know, like, I made this 2 weeks ago, you know. He's sliding his feet a lot better. But more than anything else, his just defensive awareness, the angles that he's taking off of the ball, he's using proper ball denial technique. He's starting to sniff out plays. He got two deflections last night on a Portland runs this play where they set a back screen for Lillard to get a lob, you know, ideally for a dunk at the rim, and he sniffed both of them out and got deflections and steals on those, and just little things like that where it's like, hey, I'm aware of what you guys are doing, what you're trying to do, and I'm going to take that away. He's vulnerable to the occasional flare screen where he's, you know, paying too much attention to the ball and he can get screened from behind and his man will slide down to the corner. If I really have to nitpick, that's about the worst thing I could say about him defensively right now. I've really, really been thrilled with him.
Yeah, the other thing that I've noticed, so there were two fundamental issues that I noticed, you know, in watching him play defense last year and the year before, was his back, you know, his rigidity in his back kind of annoyed me, where I kind of felt like he crouched more than got into an actual stance. And then his footwork, where he kind of hopped or plodded to places. Whereas, this year I notice him, you know, sprinting when he possibly can. You know, it takes a lot of proper footwork to be able to cross your feet defensively and maintain balance. Especially, you don't want to cross your feet when you're guarding the ball, but off of the ball, crossing your feet and keeping your shoulders squared and stuff like that. Those kind of fundamentals, I've really noticed, they've really made themselves apparent this year. And that kind of stuff makes me feel all the more excited about what he can do defensively. And Harrison, I guess I'll ask you this one. If he does continue to get that, you know, improved defensively, and, you know, right now it seems like the Lakers, you know, given how reluctant they've been to play Clarkson, to start Clarkson, do you think that's really, you know, does that role really fit him of being a combo guard off the bench? Or do you think it's kind of, you know, you play when you play and you kind of make it work as you make it work?
I think that role fits him perfectly. I think my issue with the role currently right now is that there's not really a better alternative to put in the starting lineup. And so it's a little bit weird, but I guess if they feel like Russell and Clarkson should be staggered most of the time, then I guess this is the way that they want to go about that. I just, Lou Williams starting shooting guard is just not doing anything for me. So I still think ultimately he'll probably end up being on a good team, that kind of that overqualified backup point guard, basically, or backup combo guard, I guess, since he's not a true point guard, so we can't call him a point guard. But I think ultimately that'll be his role. But I think on this current team, it still makes more sense to me for him to start, especially if he's playing defense like this.
I mean, I agree that if it means you have Lou Williams trying to guard starting shooting guards in the league, that just doesn't seem like it's going to go very well.
I thought Zach Lowe made the point really well in his column today. He just said, like, if you're worried about Lou Williams, how Lou Williams and Calderon are going to defend backup guards, then you're worried about the wrong thing.
Yeah. now, Pete, you're a proponent then of Nick Young kind of sliding into the starting role there, right? I mean, he's played really good defense, and if the Lakers are interested in maintaining those, maintaining that rotation, I feel like he makes almost too much sense. He makes more sense than Lou, right?
Which is insane. Again, we have to acknowledge is insane.
Yeah. How quickly things can change, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I like Nick Young, and I think that there's an interesting question of, You know, right now he's a better player than Brandon Ingram is, which will not be the case for very long. But and you need to play Ingram for long-term roles and whatnot. But my concern actually with putting Young at the two in the starting lineup is that you've really lost. You don't have much in the way of ball handling. Deng isn't much of a ball handler at the three, and nor is Mozgov. So I think you put an inordinate burden on Russell to handle the ball, and Randle to a lesser extent. I feel like you need to have at least three guys in a lineup that can really do something with the ball. And for all of Lou Williams's misgivings, he can handle the ball. He can run pick and rolls. He can, you know, take some of those responsibilities off of his hands. By the same token, Young is playing great defense. He gives them a spot up shooter from the 2/3 position. I'm really curious to see how those minutes are distributed between, you know, at that 2 and 3 between Clarkson, Williams, Young, and Ingram specifically.
I guess my counter to, you know, the concern of the ball handling in the starting five is the defensive burden that slides over to D'Angelo Russell, because I don't think it's a stretch to say he's a better defender than Lou Williams, right?
Yeah.
I don't think that's much in I mean, again,
about your backhanded compliment.
Right. But well, I guess my concern would be though that you are hoping that D'Angelo is able to carry the burden offensively with handling the ball, you know, and then he's also hoping you know of those two, in any time they're playing in the backcourt together, he and Lou Williams, he's going to guard the best backcourt, you know, counterpiece that the other team has to offer. So I guess I would be concerned over, is that putting too much general pressure on D'Angelo?
Yeah, that's a fair point. I don't really have a good counter to that. The when you were saying that, the thought that came to mind was, wow, it kind of would make sense to start Clarkson, wouldn't it? You know, it's with the defensive improvement that he's shown, he could, you know, because if you play Russell and Clarkson together, Russell's going to have a greater burden, right? Mm-hmm. Not necessarily he'd be the better player, but he'll have more of the responsibility in terms of ball handling, making reads. And ideally, you don't want that guy and the guy that has to guard the best guard on the other end to be the same person.
Right.
But exactly what you're saying, that's exactly what they're asking Russell to do in that situation. So, yeah, I mean, you know, I didn't foresee the Lou Williams starting in Clarkson's place. And I think there's something to be said. I don't necessarily entirely agree with Zach Lowe's point about I think it's hard to hide two guards. Mm-hmm. Defensively at the same time, and both Calderon and Williams bring a lot to the table, but playing them together would be very difficult. That said, you know, your point to the starting lineup, you know, is a fair one, and I think that Clarkson probably should be there.
Yeah, and this is by no means a finished product, right? Like we aren't. I don't think the Lakers are going to move forward in you know, 3 years from now, or even next year. They're going to have, you know, the combo of either Huertas or Calderon and Lou Williams as a potential, you know, secondary backcourt, right? So for right now,
I think... How dare you disparage the catalyst.
But I think for right now, they're kind of trying to make do as they can. But yeah, that's my concern. That was always the crazy thing with Kobe in his prime, that he had so much responsibility. And that's, you know, that was kind of the nice thing about the triangle, that it wasn't necessarily such a primary ball handler kind of thing as it was, you know, attack where you can. But Kobe was expected to be the best, you know, the top offensive threat, and then also on the other end guard the other team's best player on the perimeter. And it was insane that he was able to do both. I just, you know, I expecting a second, you know, D'Angelo Russell in his second year to be able to do that is crazy. Is worrisome to me. Harrison, if you had your choice of guys then to start, Where would you go? Would you go with Nick Young? Would you go with Anthony Brown? Would you go with, you know, Lou? How, or would you just keep it simple and ride with Clarkson?
I think honestly I'd go with Clarkson. I think I'm more concerned if seeing if him and Russell can play together and if that lineup can work and whether or not you actually do need to move him into that combo guard role off the bench or if he can be your long-term starter. I think I'm much more interested in finding that out in this new system more so than whether or not getting Clarkson adjusted to being a sixth man on a team that's not contending for anything.
Absolutely. All right, so that does it for the topics that I have written down here. Pete, is there anything else that you wanted to add? Go ahead and plug your at Laker Film Room and you know your YouTube page and everything that you're working on right now. That thing in particular, talking about the stats per set or the production on these sets is really intriguing.
Yeah, my Twitter is at Laker Film Room. You can find me Laker Film Room on YouTube as well. And yeah, I'm you know, trying best I can to put out as much quality Laker content as I can in those and delve deeper than, you know, my stated goal for this season is to tell the story of every game from a Laker perspective. And I want to document this season as thoroughly as a season's ever been documented. So, you know, that I'll wake up at, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning to download the torrent that I need to download, then go back to sleep so that I can wake up and start chopping footage. But I'm incredibly excited about this Laker season. And I want to share what I see with Laker Nation and hopefully they enjoy it.
The thing that really stood out to me, and it's funny that you talk about how excited you are for this team and Harrison, you've been to a game, obviously Pete, you and I went to yesterday's game. The amount of excitement surrounding this young group, like it was a madhouse last night. Had one of those shots gone down, you know, either Clarkson tying it up or Russell at the end of either regulation or whatever, had any of those shots gone down, it would have been nuts. And Harrison, I guess I'll let you close on this one. Is the Lakers brand dead?
I'm going to go ahead and say no. I think that's the obvious answer.
I agree. All right, so that'll do it for today's episode. Again, a lot of fun here. We are going to bring Pete back as a regular guest. We'd like to do every other week, you know, and because like I said at the start of the show, this was introductory conversations about each of these guys. We didn't talk much about, you know, stuff that Mozgov offers. We didn't talk about Ivica Zubac's skyhook. There's plenty of more stuff to talk about. So Pete, if you're open to it, we can't wait to talk to you then again as the season goes on.
I would love to. Thanks for having me, guys.
Anytime. All right, thanks Harrison for joining us again. If you can find our shows on Audioboom, iTunes, Silver Screen and Roll, Stitcher, TuneIn, and Today's Fast Break, make sure you're using the promo code LOLakers on both SeatGeek and on MacWeldon. SeatGeek gets you the $20 rebate. Mack Weldon gets you a 20% discount. And, yeah, we'll talk to everybody again tomorrow, which would be Friday. Thank God it'd be Friday.
All right. Thanks, Anthony.
Shouts to Pig Miller.
Napa Know How.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa Know How.
Napa Know How.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum 3 items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.